This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
You've now memorized the fact that we continue to stream live on the ESPN app and, of course, SiriusXM Channel 371. That's where you can find us, watch us, listen to us, and we will probably respond to you in some shape or form.
Don't forget the podcast.
Social media. The podcast. I always forget the podcast. I always forget that.
That's podcast.
Let's get our man Reese Davis on here, front and center, and he is ready to roll. Reese, first of all, happy holidays. Hope that everything is great with the family. You're healthy and ready to roll in this crazy week coming up.
We are ready. When you guys have Mac on later, tell him that I'm available if he needs a possession receiver as a short yardage guy.
Man,
I'm not sure. He might be a little short in the running back and receiver room.
Wow. I mean, kind of crazy, but we'll address that with Coach coming up, though, in about 15 or 20 minutes. I'm sure he's going to sit there and scratch his head and figure something out for A&M. But let's first start with the Heisman. We finally had the finalists announced, and from an ACC perspective, it was good to see, and rightfully so, Trevor Lawrence going to be part of that. And, again, an incredible career. And personally, I hope he wins. I think he's the best player. But again, you never know how this stuff's going to be voted out one way or the other. But it was just great to see him get recognized.
It was, Pack, and he might be the beneficiary of some split voting with some of the other guys, particularly the two finalists from Alabama, and maybe even Najee Harris figured into that as well. So, I'm happy for Trevor. I think that probably this would be much more likely that he would have won it had he not missed a couple of games with the virus. So not that he should be penalized for that necessarily, but you can't penalize the other guys who played. So it's I do think it's just that he's a finalist. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he won, although I don't necessarily think that he would be the favorite right now, mostly for those reasons. But I do agree with you. He's, in terms of looking at who's going to be drafted first and everything, he's clearly the top player.
You know, Reese, you sat around the table a year ago and doing those CFP 150 discussions, and I find this fascinating when we talk about Lawrence because he could become really about the third player. Well, he'll become the second. If he doesn't win the trophy, I think he's the first player really since Peyton Manning who's going to have an incredible legacy in college football and yet not win the Heisman Trophy. Does a player like Lawrence, in your mind, from a history standpoint, does he have to win the Heisman to cement his legacy, or is it already written? I think we get to an interesting discussion if he doesn't win.
Well, I agree with you, Wes. That is a complicated thing. I don't think he has to win it because certainly Peyton's legacy is well established at Tennessee. I would also say that Andrew Luck is in that category as well. I mean, they went to major bowl games with Andrew, and in all honesty, I probably shouldn't say this publicly, although I have a couple of times, because it's hard to say it without coming off as casting aspersions at the person who won, who had a great season and is a worthy winner. But I regret my vote the year that Andrew didn't win it because I think I was such an Andrew Luck fan, and I'd been on him early, and there'd been that thing, I don't even know if I've ever told you guys or not, but I bet Lou and Mark each $100. Like after I saw, I was raving about Luck after the first game, or first maybe the Wake Forest game that they lost. And I bet them both $100 because they were making fun of me on the spot. I said, when their draft years come, I said, whenever it is, I said, I will bet both of you. Well, actually, I offered any amount of money they wanted to bet that Andrew Luck would be drafted higher than Tim Tebow. And it became a thing on our studio thing, and I became so cognizant of maybe being too pro-Andrew Luck that I think I was too hard on him in the Heisman voting that year. They lost the Oregon game. I think he didn't have his best night. And maybe some of that happens to guys like Trevor over the course of time. But then I think when you're able to step back from it, from that season and the voting, you can put it in proper perspective. The interesting thing to me is that, and I don't know if all of the All-American teams have come out yet. I don't think they have. If Trevor doesn't make first-team All-American as quarterback this year, then he's not going to be eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame. you know, that's it's part of the bylaws. That's written in there. I mean, there are guys like Drew Brees that had phenomenal careers. They weren't first team All-Americans. And it's pretty easily justifiable this year if you had Mac Jones or Kyle Trask as a first team All-American quarterback. Obviously, last year was Joe Burrow. And I don't think, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think anybody had anyone other than Joe as first team All-American last year. And then the previous year was his freshman year. So it's, and Kyler Murray and Tua that year too. So that's another interesting component of his legacy. I suspect he probably will be first team All-American on one of the teams and therefore be eligible. But if not, that's another layer to it as well.
Reese, let me tell you something. If a guy can go potentially 36-1 in his career, win two national championships, his only loss is in the other national championship game, and doesn't win the Heisman and is in the College Football Hall of Fame, I would have to call BS on those other two. I got to be honest with you. I mean, that is utterly ridiculous.
No, I hear what you're saying, but taken individually, it's not a career award. I mean, it can be, but I think it's a pretty easy argument this year, Pac, without, divulging which way I went. It's a complicated vote, but it's pretty easy this year to understand why he didn't win the Heisman. It's really easy last year to understand why he didn't win the Heisman. And, that doesn't change a thing. He is a great player. He's a generational player. It doesn't change that. But, you have a lot of other circumstances around awards and lifetime achievements and things like that. And maybe, things just don't fall, but maybe they will. It could also fall in his favor that, he could win the Heisman when they announce it, and it could still easily be argued that this season, the 2020 season, that, Devontae Smith or Mac Jones were far more impactful than he. Those are reasonable arguments. And, and also take into account the games he missed. But it's also very reasonable if he wins the Heisman and people say, hey, look, just what you said, he's a generational talent. His teams win every game. All those things are reasonable too.
I will just throw this in too. And again, I'm not a Heisman voter, but if I was, I know who I'd vote for. He was also the face of bringing college football into the forefront in 2020. He was a member of the group that said, hey, listen, we want to play. Right. And I that's got to come into play. I'm sorry. This particular year is unlike anything we've ever experienced. But if you tell me a guy could go 36-1, potentially win two national championships and never win the Heisman and never be in the College Football Hall of Fame, I would have to say those two organizations need to check themselves. That's what I'm just going to say.
You're entitled to that.
That's right.
I think he probably will be first team All-American somewhere because it's not any particular one. It's just one of the major teams. I just thought it was an interesting point because of the way things have fallen for him this year. And no one would argue that he should have been ahead of Joe Burrow last year. And, certainly no one would argue his freshman year. And then he's had some unfortunate circumstances. I think had he not missed those two games, he would have been a slam dunk for both. Just as Joe Burrow was last year.
Hey, Reese, I want to transition here to Friday. We get to these games and they are so meaningful, and we spent a lot of time and angst talking about the Final Four, and then we get to the four, and sometimes they lose a bit of steam. The one at 4 o'clock has already kind of been positioned as David and Goliath a little bit. The one at 8 o'clock, because of the entertainment last year with Ohio State and Clemson, that's got a different temperament to it. Been a while since we've had, on paper at least, these two stark matchups like this coming at you in a semifinal.
I actually think that Notre Dame didn't play its best game against Clemson in the ACC championship for sure, and I think Clemson's the better team when at full strength for sure. But I think that. I think that Notre Dame is capable of playing better than it played against Clemson, and they have heard for the last, 2 weeks since that game that they shouldn't be in the playoff and they're going to get whacked again and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that's going to be very motivating for them. I do think that, they're going to have to be really efficient on offense to keep up with Alabama or or they're going to have to force mistakes, a couple or three turnovers, something of that nature. But the good news for Notre Dame is that they're capable of doing it. So I don't know that I necessarily see a spread as big as the one that I saw recently, 19.5. I don't know if exactly where it is right now.
Right.
I think Notre Dame's a little bit better than that. So I think Notre Dame can give Alabama a challenge, but I would be disingenuous if I said that I think Alabama will have to help them a little bit, and Notre Dame will have to play really, really well. But I do think they're capable of doing the latter, and then maybe they'll get a break or two, and it'll make the game really interesting. Clemson and Ohio State, I heard that you referenced Tim Beret. I think he also put out the stat on Twitter yesterday about the number of passing yards that Ohio State has given up. And Ohio State's certainly not, personnel-wise, on defense, what it was last year. But I also think that in a shorter schedule, for as much grief as they've taken over that, it can also skew your stats a little bit. And they have given up some passing yards, and facing Trevor Lawrence is not the ideal situation when that's happened to you. But they're also very talented. And I do think that they're capable. I think they're capable of not only beating Clemson, they're capable of beating Alabama or Notre Dame, winning the national championship. And I've said this from the beginning, that it is, I understand people arguing against their inclusion because there is something to play in the games. Ohio State knows mm-hmm. that better than anybody. They've stepped on rape twice, in 17 and 18, and kept themselves out of the playoff. Teams that could have won the national championship. 2015, they did the same thing, against a Michigan State team that did go to the playoff, but clearly Ohio State should have beaten them. They didn't. The games are important, and I understand the logic, but now that we're here, selection and performance, once you're there, are mutually exclusive. And Ohio State is perfectly capable of performing well enough to win the national championship.
Yeah, I think the committee got it right with the four. But, Reese, I mentioned right before we brought you on, it seems, it could be 100% wrong here. It just seems like Clemson and Ohio State are destined to see each other a bunch this decade, don't they? Really, they are positioned with their respective leagues to the point where, hey, it's going to take some kind of effort by somebody else to have one of those magical years to knock them out of they're the champs until proven otherwise, right? Ohio State looks dominant in the Big Ten. Clemson's been dominant in the ACC. And there is that relationship. It's kind of a weird relationship between these two. But it just feels like we're going to see this game 3, 4, 5 times this upcoming decade.
You've even got Herb Streets on both sides of it now.
That's right.
With Zach committing to Ohio State and Jake and Ty playing for Clemson. So, it looks that way. But, guys, doesn't it always look that way until it changes? Right. I remember, 15 years ago, we were all saying, USC will never lose again. They'll always be in Pac-12. Everybody can recruit to USC. They're going to win 12 national championships. And it didn't happen. And it just sort of, one day they're on top of the world, the next day they're losing as a 41-point favorite to Stanford. So things can change, but what is happening right now, if you take the 30,000-foot view of it, is that you have the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport, Alabama. You have another one that is trending in that direction that's about 5 years behind it in its evolution, meaning in times of when it started and how long it's lasting, in Clemson. And you have another one in Ohio State that has all of the earmarks of the other two. And so it's pretty easy and smart to look at this and say, yeah, they're going to see a lot of each other over the next several years. Of course, a lot of that depends on what Ryan Day wants to do with his career, what Dabo wants to do with his career, and unforeseen circumstances, it can change things in an instant, as it did at USC.
I was going to say real quick, Reese, there was a time we all thought when Miami joined the ACC that we're going to have Florida State and Miami in every ACC championship game. And here we are in 2020, getting ready to go to 21. We haven't seen it yet. You just never know with this stuff.
Hey, Reese, real quick, it's been an interesting fall, as Pac said, unlike one we've never seen before. What have we learned, you think, through the fall campaign?
It's tough to say Wes, exactly. But I think that while understanding perspective and relative to life matters and so forth, that this that this is important, that this enterprise is important for a lot of people. It's important to give the people at large a sense of normalcy. And while the players have made a lot of social and personal adjustments to their lives, and some that have been uncomfortable and some that are straining for them, real strain, things that, you know, there are athletes, not just football players, who've had to deal with, you know, a lot of mental wellness and so forth from the restrictions that they've been placed under as a result of this, but they've done so because it's important to them. And I think that by and large, I mean, you can't speak exclusively for every individual, but I think it has been good for them too, to have to have this outlet, to be able to play, to be able to pursue something that the great majority of them have poured their guts into. So I think that while there have been challenges and while there have certainly been hiccups, I think we've learned that it was worthy of doing this. And I think it's important to continue to try to do this and try to do things as wisely as you possibly can, and to be cautious and alert to protect the interest of the players. Now, from a physical health standpoint, and I think that playing by and large, again, not speaking exclusively for every single player, but by and large, I think it is good and healthy for them from a mental standpoint as well.
All right. Thanks, as always. Happy holidays, my man.
We'll continue this afternoon. So bring your A game, all right?
All right. I will. You say bring your A game. I don't have anything else, Pat. That's all I have in the bag.
That's why we love you, Davis. That's why we love you.
Thanks, Reese.
All right, guys. We'll see. All right.
You bet. Reese Davis from ESPN, host of College Game Day. Stay tuned. When we come back on the other side, we go to Chapel Hill, the head football coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. All those guys that dabbled in television. Now he's got a team going to its first major bowl in 70 years. Mac Brown next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Many thanks to Reese Davis, who just joined us. And now we're going to go to Chapel Hill, because the Heels are heading to a major bowl for the first time in, 70 years. Heading to the Orange Bowl. First time ever. The head coach joins us. That'd be Mac Brown. Coach, happy holidays and congratulations on all the success.
Thank you, Mark and Wes. The kids laugh. As old as I am, I was not born the last time we went to a major bowl, so they think that is really old. I was born in 51, and 50 was our last time, so I said, guys, I nearly got it, but I wasn't quite there. So they know, man, how long it's been when we put it in that perspective.
Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, goodness. All right, so let's get to the news if we can. You've had four players make a decision to not continue to stay with the team. And I know it's an individual decision, but collectively they get looped in together. Take us through the process, if you can, with Chaz and then obviously Diami and Javonte and Michael, Coach.
Yeah, guys, you know, I've thought about this a lot the last 2 weeks, and people they continually ask me, what's different from the last time you coached? I've never had a young guy not go to a bowl game. So this is different. So I've really tried to put it in perspective, and I've tried to look at all different aspects. And when you start looking at it, the first thing you have to do is say, this team won two games 2 years ago, and this coaching staff and these players have put them in the Orange Bowl. So two wins to 2 years in the Orange Bowl is unbelievable. So it's a major accomplishment. And then secondly, you look at what our jobs are supposed to be, and it's supposed to be take these young guys from high school and bring them into college, or take guys that Coach Fedora had recruited that are here and help them grow, have better options for their life, and be in a better position after football to have a great family. So our job is to coach these guys and put them in a better position to get what they want next. So we've done that. You look at Javonte Williams was a short yardage and goal line back. He had a little over 200 yards is 2 years ago. Now he's one of the best backs in the country. He'll be drafted very high. Deami Brown was a guy without a lot of confidence. He caught 40. Oh, gosh, he's caught so many balls the last 2 years. It's unbelievable. He's one of the best and fastest receivers in the country. Michael Carter was a good player when we got here. He was a guy I asked the first day as number eight coming back because I like him on ESPN, and he'll be a highly drafted running back. And then Chaz Surratt, what a story. Tommy Thigpen's taking a guy that was a quarterback 2 years ago when we got here, and now he'll be a top-round draft choice as a linebacker. So you look at it, and as disappointed as I am, our staff is, our players are, our fans are, and even these four guys that they're not playing, what a success story they are. And we're so happy for them, and we're so proud for them, because that's what we're supposed to do, is help guys get better options than they had 2 years ago, and then get all the information available for them and let them make their decisions. Guys, it's no different than an assistant coach that leaves. Yeah. I mean, they get opportunities to leave. Are they disappointed? Do they like where they are? Sure. Hate to leave the players? They're going to leave if it's a better deal for them. Head coaches, they're going to leave if it's a better deal for them. All of us in our lives don't like to say it. We're going to leave for a better deal if it comes up. So what I've been able to do is process this thing up and down. It hadn't been simple and easy for me to be proud of the guys, very thankful of all they've given us, because, my gosh, they're four of our best players. It's two captains and two most valuable players on offense and defense and our leading receiver. So we wouldn't be in the Orange Bowl without their performances. And at the same time, look at the guys that are here. We got a lot of good players. And these unexpected absences now create opportunities for the other guys. So, come on, man. Let's go play in the Orange Bowl. Let's move on. Let's thank the guys. Let's love them. Let's appreciate them. Let's help them move forward. But let's not hold it against them, because all they did is do what they felt like was best for their families, which is what all of us would do.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a selfish standpoint, sitting on the couch this upcoming week watching games, Coach, I wish they were all playing to finish off the deal and get to the Orange Bowl. But like, again, in this day and age, the student-athlete has to take care of him or her, whatever the sport may be. And these are strange times. They're unique times. And so, again, I said earlier today on the show, I'm really struggling as a fan that you want to see him compete against A&M, because you guys have done such a great job to get a goal to get back to a major bowl. But you also understand, hey, you got to take care of yourself from an individual standpoint. And again, it's a tough situation. I can only imagine in your shoes, because you got to go get ready to take on Jimbo and a top five football team that's going to be motivated to play to prove that, hey, we belonged in the college football playoff. But with that said, Reese Davis has offered his services. I don't know what kind of 40 he runs, but he just mentioned, I don't think he's got great speed, Coach. You may have to bypass on Reese. But with the guys you do have coming back, how does that alter your plan to take on an A&M team that defensively has been very good up front? And obviously, their offensive line is one of the very best in the country.
Yeah, Mark, Texas A&M is very much like Notre Dame. I can see how the committee struggled to see which one should be fourth and which one fifth, because we've played one and now we're really studying the other one. Same guys. Big, powerful offensive line, big backs that are going to run right down your throat, great tight end, quarterback like Ian Book that manages the game so well and smart, a defense that's so well coached and tough and big. God, they're big. That's what we've got to do. We got to get bigger as a team, because these teams in the top 10 are huge, and now we're going to play three top 10 teams in our last four games, so it's good for us to know where we are. But they're not going to feel sorry for us. They got a smile on their face. I know. But I do think that it also bodes toward us expanding the playoffs. I don't want to see our bowls being hurt, and we're seeing that some. None of the guys in the playoffs are opting out. So people have decided the playoff is more important than the bowl games, and I hate that. It's important, but I love our bowls, and I want the bowls to keep who they are. And right now, our bowl will be for our fans, for our seniors, that it'll be their last game, but also our team that's fought so hard to get there. So we've still got reasons to play, but it's just different. So if it was six or eight teams in the playoff, A&M would be in the playoff, and they should be. And that'd be better than them being mad at us. Yeah. We voted for you. Coach. We wanted Jim.
All right. I want to ask you a question that's bigger picture, though. And it kind of goes back to the late 80s when you got there, and now, you know, hearing the comeback in 2 years and getting a team to this point. Because for all the great things that have happened in 2020 with your football team to get to this game, I also know how much you focus on the program. And after 2 years, I would think a good bit of that checklist that when you wanted to come back to Carolina has been met. But also, I think I know well enough that as much as 2020 is this game, it's also a lead to 2021. And you got to be pretty excited to see some of these guys in spots against A&M by what it will also pay off once you get to next fall.
Yeah, Wes, no question. And Mark, I got off track there to finish your question. Yes, we've got Javonte walks in before Saturday's practice and says, I'm not going to play in the game. We've already had a week's preparation for game plans. We got to figure it out here fast. I walked into the staff meeting and said, hey, yep, Javonte's not playing. Okay, here we go. Back to work. We've got a lot of decisions to make between now and Saturday. Secondly, Wes, you're so right. This team will be better prepared for people leaving even next year or the next year than we are right now, because we're not built for that yet. But we will be, because everybody's going to look at saying, okay, who's not going to play? Let's start getting somebody ready for the guy that's leaving as you're moving forward. But at the same time, we have 12 early enrollees that'll be here January 16th. Our team will be a lot better on January 16th when these new guys come in. I do think we'll have spring practice this year. If they let us have games, we sure should have spring practice, and especially with the vaccine coming. And we're just going to get better and better and better. And that's fun. It's exciting. And I'm already excited about spring practice. I just can't wait. And now that our guys have felt the major bowl thing, that they know what it's like to play three top 10 teams in 4 weeks. They understand we're not in that neighborhood yet, but we're trying to get there, man. Notre Dame, we were in it for three quarters, and then we decided to sell our house. We couldn't stay. And then Miami, we jumped on them, and they didn't play as well, but that was a real confidence boost for our guys. And now we've got another great opportunity to see where we are against one of the best teams in the country. A&M could have possibly won a national championship. I mean, that's where they are. So good for us that we're at least running around in the neighborhood with the best teams. And I'm so proud of our team. We talk about the four guys that aren't going to play. There's so many teams across the country that decided not to play. I'm excited that our team wants to play, and that they're pumped and can't wait for the challenge on Saturday night.
Coach, after all the years at Texas, and for folks that haven't experienced Texas and A&M, it's unlike any other rival. I mean, everybody's got their own little nuances, but that one's got a bunch of them. It seems ironic that, you know, the Heels get to a major bowl for the first time in 70 years, and you've done such a great job round one and now in round two, and here you go seeing A&M again. It seems like you just can't get rid of these guys. They're following you around.
They don't like me very much. So that's part of the deal, too. When you're at Texas and you're at Texas A&M, your neighbors, you live in the same state, but they don't. The only time they get around each other is Thanksgiving in the old days, and that was just so one could brag over the other one. But I've got great respect for Texas A&M and their history, their culture. It's one of the best fan bases in college football. They're loyal. Oh my gosh, they sell out. That stadium actually shakes when you're over there. So we had some great battles with A&M and great experiences. The one that wasn't was the bonfire where we lost 12 young Aggies, and I'll never get over that the rest of my life. It's a learning experience for me, and every Thanksgiving I think about those 12 families, and that game was a healing process for the Aggies, but still 12 families lost their children, and I can't even fathom that to this day.
I know this has nothing to do with the ACC network or your game, but you know what? College football needs those two to play again, don't they? I mean, that's just one of those kind of games that, hey, forget egos, forget all that stuff. They need to play. Texas and A&M need to play football.
Yeah, Mark, one of the things that we lost with realignment is we lost Oklahoma, Nebraska. I mean, we lost some great games that we need to get back, because all of us as young people sat on Thanksgiving and watched Texas and Texas A&M. Always. I mean, that's what we did. And then it was such an honor to coach in that game, because I felt like I'd been there for my whole life. But you're exactly right. We need to go back and figure out who were those great rivalries that were missing. And we need to make an NCAA rule that they all have to play, just so we can enjoy watching them.
Yeah, like even here in the ACC, like Pitt West Virginia, the backyard brawl, Pitt Penn State. I mean, those are the kind of games as kids, man, you just couldn't wait to watch. I know Oklahoma and Nebraska are going to play each other in a home-and-home series, but and congrats to both ADs for doing it. But those are the kind of games that make the fabric of college football, whether you're a West Coast guy or Deep South or wherever, anybody in between. The reason you truly love college football are those kind of games. Even if you don't even have any skin in the game, you just couldn't help but watch it and get enamored with what was going on.
Yeah, I think Rivalry Week is probably my best, most enjoyable week of the year for college football. I just love watching people that have respect for each other, but don't like each other on that day because they have to see each other at church on Sunday and at work on Monday, and you get bragging rights for a year, and it just means more. Yeah. And we need that back.
Amen to that.
Hey, Coach, broad stroke here, because Mark and I talked, and Pac said this in June when we came back to do daily shows, that, you know, it was going to be important for ACC football to play in the fall of 2020, and just a remarkable commitment by the institutions and the leaderships, and in particular the kids, just to get the fall campaign in football, because it did have an impact certainly on the landscape of the game. But at the same time, and you've seen this now in two different kind of eras, obviously when you coached there the first time and now coming back, but even from afar, this looks like the ACC that a lot of people envisioned 15, 20 years ago. And now we just talked about De'Eric King coming back to Miami, Kenny Pickett to Pittsburgh. Certainly Sam Howell comes back for a junior year. Duke is going to be the only school that does not return a quarterback that started at least one game this year. This looks like a time where your team's getting better, and a lot of teams are going to stay there. And this could be a preamble to a very big 21 for ACC football.
Yeah, I was really hoping the quarterback at Miami and the quarterback at Pitt would leave. I wrote them notes. I said, you guys are such great NFL players. And
I know.
We love college football, and we love what they do. But you're so right, Wes. Let's start with John Swofford, the presidents and chancellors and ADs in the ACC. The day that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 opted out, I didn't think we'd play.
Yeah,
I figured everybody would say, okay, it's not safe. If they think it's not safe, we're out of here. We're not going to play. And we're sitting here addressing our players, and they're saying, Coach, we're not going to play, are we? And I said, I really don't know. I would think it doesn't look good today. And then the Kevin Gustowitz of the world, our chancellor, and the Bubba Cunninghams and John Swofford stood up and said, we're not going to make a decision today. We're going to continue to follow the medical progress and go through a process and see, make sure it's safe, and then we're going to play. And these people did an amazing job of putting a great product on the field and not panicking when somebody got COVID and had to move a game or change a game. Everybody worked together. And it has been an amazing year under very difficult circumstances. I know it's been better for the health of the players. I know that. They're around doctors every day. They're around trainers. They get tested 3 days a week. They've got vitamins. They've got nutritionists feeding them properly. They've got strength programs. They're in kind of a bubble. So it's healthier for most than it would have been at home. I know that it's healthier mentally that they had structure and discipline. We had over a 3.0 in the last two semesters. And it could have been a disaster for mental health. We've heard about suicides are up, depression's up, anxiety's up, everything's up. So, and then the product on the field gave people something to look forward to. Even though they couldn't be in the stands, they could wear their clothes and tailgate and get excited for something that's fun and good instead of all of the awful in the world that we read and hear about every day. So these kids have been absolutely incredible. I tell them every day, I'm amazed at the way they worked and maybe football wasn't pretty every weekend. But my gosh, they did things that a lot of people couldn't do. And I'm so proud of them.
Coach, again, best of luck this week against A&M. Happy holidays. It really has been an amazing year of ACC football, and you're part of the success story, and it's great having you back on the sidelines. And again, we always love having you on the show.
Thank you, Mark and Wes. And again, in closing here, thanks to all the medical help and the first responders and healthcare workers. And it's you folks have done an amazing job of keeping us afloat and trying to help us make this awful situation work. And for you that have family members and friends fighting COVID, we're praying for you and thinking about you. And hopefully we'll be through this and get on the other side soon.
All right. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it. Good luck this weekend against the Aggies. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Mack Brown, head football coach at North Carolina. Appreciate his time. Stay tuned. Coming around the corner on the Monday program, the Duke women's basketball team has decided to shut it down for the rest of the year. We'll note that and also a recap of what's going on. In the men's card, we get ready for a doubleheader tomorrow night right here on ACC Network. Back after this.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. 844-SAY-ACC-NMA. Thanks to Reese Davis and, of course, Coach Mack Brown. By the way, you'll hear Reese again this afternoon on Off Campus. Just saying. Channel 84. 4-7.
ESPNU Radio. SiriusXM. That's it. There you go. Get it all over you.
You can get that all over you. We'll be wide open today, I assure you.
My God.
One of the other big stories from the weekend, we addressed this earlier, though, is the Duke women's basketball program. It's just not comfortable moving forward. So we will not see the ladies at Cameron the rest of the season, Wes. And, again, I know we had Steve Wiseman on earlier from the Raleigh News and Observer. I am kind of intrigued to see how this goes for both the not only the women but also the men. Jay Wright just contacted a positive COVID test. I mean, this has been such a disruptive start to the hoop season. And I don't think Duke will be the only one that says we just can't move forward. I hate to say that, but it just kind of feels like we're kind of fighting an uphill battle a little bit across the board from a basketball perspective.
Mark, I think the remember we talked about getting to the end of the road in football and how it got really crooked at the end. It wasn't going to be a straight line. And my concern is that the basketball road is already getting crooked. And we're still, relatively early, right? Look, we all know that, and you said this right. I mean, again, something I think about. The end far more important than the beginning from the perspective of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And there are markers out there as to how important the end is starting to become for the NCAA too. Now, they're not glaring markers yet, but there are little mileposts out there that the NCAA knows they have to get to the Division I men's basketball championship specifically this year. But this is a sign that student athletes are taking hold of their own programs. And look, I think Steve said it well. The players were the ones who made this decision. Jade Williams on social media he's right, has been very outspoken and saying, hey, look, we're not quitting. We're just not comfortable. The idea of playing, and certainly if everything transpired the way Steve said it did, that the positive test around their program came up after the game with Louisville, then that's a concern. And make no mistake, too, and I've heard more than one basketball coach talk about the scenario with Keyontae Johnson in the Florida State-Florida ball game in Tallahassee a couple weeks ago. That has had and left an impact on players and coaches and schools around college basketball, not just in the ACC. So we'll see what transpires here, but I think we need to be ready for anything to develop as the basketball season continues.
And, you know, I kidded around, not trying to be funny, but making a point that with football, we didn't know if we could, can we get this thing started? And if so, can we get to the finish line? I think basketball is in some respects kind of a polar opposite that, hey, whenever we start, great, but we have to have a finish. And I believe that now more so than ever before. And it doesn't have to be their traditional March Madness. Maybe it's May Madness for all we know. But there has to
and
be
why
a
can't
finish
it be?
Line. Why not?
Right?
I mean, to be honest with you, we always called it March Madness. And for the most part, the team that was fortunate enough to win and cut down the nets, it was normally in April anyhow. So if it gets pushed back that, hey, listen, everybody's got to take a couple weeks off and just kind of chill and let's figure this out. If it happens to go to May, so be it. But we have to get a finish to the season in hoops. It must happen.
Well, I know we got to get to break here. The only thing I will qualify this next is that we need to see some leadership out of the NCAA now, Pac, as it relates to basketball. I mean, now's not the time for subcommittees and all this other stuff. We need to see some pretty steadfast leadership out of the Indianapolis office, to be honest with you, probably to get to the end of the line on this. I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I've been waiting on the NCAA to tell me something that would show that, hey, we've put some people together and we've come up with a plan and this is what we've told you only need to play a minimum of 13 games, and that's the last thing we've heard from Indianapolis. We haven't heard minimum number of players. Kevin Keats told us that last week on the show, right? We haven't heard anything in relationship. We need to see some leadership out of Indianapolis as to what an expectation is to get to the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship whenever that starts, March, April, whatever the case may be.
D-H-Y-B. Don't hold your breath.
I know. Not getting it, though. We're not getting it.
Not yet.
So when we come back, a final segment on this show, and Packer is going to show us, or he did show us on social media, one of his illustrious Christmas gifts from over the weekend. Once again, playing to the core values of our audience.
That's exactly right.
We will come back and do that and more. Final segment on the Monday show is next right here on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
All right, don't forget tomorrow, 10 o'clock, right after this show ends, you'll get a special edition of The Huddle. Notre Dame defensive coordinator and new Vanderbilt coach Clark Lee, Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott. Live press conference coverage from the two ACC semifinalists in the college football playoff tomorrow, 10 a.m. right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. You're going to get more details, more insider info, not to mention the Friday brunch edition of Packer and Durham ahead of another spectacular two-hour huddle on game day. That's right.
That'll be good tomorrow that you'll get breaking news at 10:05 live, right? That'd be great. Because normally 10:05 hits and we're already, or at least I'm upstairs or walking the dogs or something, 10:05, it's like our traditional breaking news moment. But tomorrow we'll be spot on. At 10:05.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, you could just Kelsey Riggs moderating those press conference shows from our ACC Network studio, and then something happens at 10:05, they'll just, hey, Kelsey, here's the breaking news, right?
Like it. Like everything about it.
I do, too. All right. So you had a holiday haul of sorts.
I did.
Didn't you?
Santa was good to me.
A lot of singular driven items, though, I've noticed.
A bourbon themed Christmas for me, which was beautiful. Multiple brown waters and assortment of tumblers and bourbon stationery and bourbon maple syrup. And I mean, I was
bourbon
living
stationery.
I'm going to show you. I'm going to bring that from upstairs. You'll see it tomorrow. In fact, I'll write you a note.
I want to talk about one thing, though.
What's that?
What in the world was this you put on social media? The whiskey wedge?
Yeah, the whiskey wedge. How about that?
What's the deal here?
You get the glass, and this came from my daughter Emerson, and God bless her, she was smart. and there's a contraption you put over the top of the glass, and then you pour water, and the contraption, literally, you put it in the freezer, and it ices literally right down the middle, but on a diagonal 45-degree angle there. And so literally half of the glass is ice, and the other half is your favorite pour, which this happened to be the Jefferson's Reserve very small batch. And so that's instead of the singular cube, it's basically half the glass is iced. And it's from a company called Corsical, because I got so many people wanting to know where you could get it. I said, well, Santa brought it to me, but it says on the box here, Corsical, and it's called a whiskey wedge. And so therefore, there you go. So we sampled that yesterday or Saturday or whatever day it was this week. All those bourbon days run together after a while during a holiday. So there you go. So a very large brown water holiday for me.
Let me ask you this. In your marketing experience promotional experience, which you have a vast, vast world of, can you envision a Packer and Durham logo on one of those glasses, one of those wedges?
Yes, I could. I tell you what, speaking of, I put a picture. It wasn't even that picture. It was I got a head start. I had the fire going this weekend almost nonstop.
Yeah.
So life was good. And my buddy Eddie George saw the picture and sent me. In fact, I need to send it to the boys. And he said, "Pack, I'm thinking just the way you are." And he sent me a picture of his glass with an ice cube and the Woodford Reserve. And his glass had the Heisman on it, had the Heisman pose on it. As I went, "Whoa,
I can't
mess Eddie George with a Heisman." Whiskey glass, you can't beat that. That's as good as it gets. So I may have to send that for our use here on the show. But nevertheless, it was a great Christmas. Right. I hope everybody had a great Christmas.
Yep, same here. By the way, press conference is tomorrow. How about coming up next here on ACC Network? We're going to take you to the campuses of Clemson and Notre Dame. Brian Kelly and Tommy Reese at the microphone in South Bend. Dabo Swinney, Brent Venables, and players from both schools as well. Coming up next, Kelsey Riggs and the coach Mark Richt will be there for a special edition of the huddle, if you will. Thanks to Mac Brown. Thanks to Reese Davis. Thanks to Steve Weissman for joining us. Luke Hancock, Drew, Josh, Alex, thanks as well. Stay safe, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. for Packer and Durham.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.